friend. Hello. I've been practicing at home, and so just today, sitting here, I was thinking, if it all goes bluey, I'm just going to talk about my trip to Italy. if I lose my place. I started many different ways when I was at home, here, there, where. So I'm going to start, I finally decided I would start at the beginning, which is my father and mother separated when I was two. My mother left me with my dad, and in my childhood, I then spent, when I was between one and two, I was in several homes in Berkeley, I mean family homes in Berkeley. And when I was in nursery school, I was in Bisbee, Arizona for a year. Mm-hmm. But my father worked at an institute of forest genetics. He was a geneticist in Placerville. So I didn't see him too often when I was pretty little because he sort of was up there a lot. When I was, so that was nursery school. First grade, I was in Berkeley, living with another family in Berkeley and going to the first grade. And in second grade, my father put me into a boarding school in Walnut Creek. And in that boarding school, there was a girl whose mother my father met, and he married her. And the girl was, nobody liked her. She was unpleasant. So she was my half-sister for 2 years in Oakland. And my father finally divorced her. And I went with him to my grandparents' ranch in Placerville. Mm. They had a pear and sheep ranch up in Placerville. And that's where I lived for the fourth grade. And the ranch has always been a part of my soul. It's been a wonderful part of my life. And when I was 10, just about to go into the fifth grade, my father married again, a woman who had a home in Sacramento, and that's where I ended up living until I went away to college. So that fourth year in Placerville, plus the times before when I spent with my grandparents, I went to church with them and Sunday school, and they were Presbyterians. And the church, the church was a Presbyterian church, a Protestant church. Nothing was in it. There are no saints, there are no, nothing. It's just a church. And I enjoyed it. I sat next to my grandpa and listened to my grandma sing, and I tried to sing. I did discover that in the past, since then, I have thought back upon this going to church business, sitting in the pews with my grandparents and realizing that I learned how to sit still. Children today don't have that experience. And in fact, children today who go to church with their parents are shuffled off into another room where they can do stuff, but they don't sit in the pews with their parents learning how to sit still and quiet, you know. So I learned that. But I went to Sunday school. And Sunday school was okay. I had one experience, though, that has stayed with me that sort of has stuck in my mind, is that one day the Sunday school teachers told us that playing cards was a sin. Well, my grandparents played bridge. And they belonged to a church group that played bridge. And I couldn't put this together, you know. It's a sin. But there were my grandparents sinning. And so I asked the Sunday school teacher about this. Why is playing cards a sin? And she said, well, why don't you pray about it? So I did for 2 weeks. I prayed about it. You know, I probably did that now I lay me down to sleep thing. And then I prayed about it. Well, in 2 weeks, I got no answer. And that was that. That was that for prayer. I didn't pay much attention anymore to the power of prayer. But I'm sure I know there's power there. But that was an interesting lesson, sort of negative lesson. After I left Placerville and ended up living in Sacramento with my stepmother and my father, who my father still was coming home on weekends, so it wasn't a regular, I mean, it was regular, but it was weekends. We would sit at the table and have discussions, and I would bring home from visits to the ranch things that I'd heard in the church. Still, this was ongoing. And my father was a scientist. He was a geneticist. forest geneticist, and he was an agnostic, and had a classical training, Greek, not the language, but the Greek masters and everything. So I would bring up these things that I'd heard in the church, and Daddy would say, well, what about this? And I'd have to think, and he'd say, and how about this? So there was an awful lot of this, how about this, and how about this? As he was questioning me and having me look at what was being taught in the church as the law, in a sense, and what he believed was not, and I came to agree with him. I came to, by thinking, I came to think, there's a lot that you're, that this is correct. And he also, he really, really didn't like organized religion, and I didn't. I became not, I don't like organized religion. Like that. So I never went to church. When I was married, we got married in a church, but not one we belonged to. We had children, and I never took them to Sunday. I never took them to church in Sunday school. And there is a slight regret in that. I couldn't have taken them to church. I couldn't have had them sitting there learning about Sunday school's business. I couldn't. But there's a benefit for going to church or Sunday school and learning about the Bible. In our culture, it's very biblical. There's biblical references everywhere. And it's important to know what they mean, I think. But I didn't give that to my children. So it will go right by them. And that's a loss, because I didn't do that. We didn't have little Sunday morning sessions at home. Is it working?
Yes.
Okay. So that's my religious upbringing, or my religious life. Years passed, and I began to go to Al-Anon because of my mother, who's not an alcoholic. There's no alcohol in my family and anywhere, but she's a crazy-making kind of person. And I met her again when I was 10, and I was fascinated by her. She's lived many places, but she was not, and this is not what I'm going to talk about, but it was she was a difficult woman. So because of her, I went to Al-Anon. So then I learned about the higher power, which sort of made sense, because I think about the earth and Gaia and thinking it's all one thing, and we are the universe. I like that idea. So I could go along with Al-Anon. It wasn't very religious. There were no ceremonies, except we held hands at the end and said, keep coming back. I think there were some other few things that I liked. It was a pleasant experience. And I went for maybe 5, 6, 7 years, I don't know, and then I didn't feel the need anymore. And I heard about this Sangha from a friend. And I heard about it for about a year. And then I thought, well, I wonder if it'd be okay if I came. She talked a lot about Ed and Gibb, and so I started coming to this Sangha. And the first thing I had to deal with was bowing. Coming from the Protestant world, there's no bowing. It just isn't something one does. I don't do it easily. This bowing business was very difficult, and I sort of did little things. I'm not really bowing, I'm just doing this. That was the first thing that was a hurdle. It was a hurdle for quite a while. But the thing that impressed me was people laughed. You don't laugh in a Protestant, in a Presbyterian church. Nobody sits around laughing. And this was sort of fun, The Dharma talks were, people laughed, people had a good time. It was very friendly and warm. And so I really began to relax into it and to like it. And I did like the talks a lot. I didn't like the bowing. And we read about bowing with Suzuki Roshi, has something about bowing, and Ed talked about bowing, and little by little I came to thinking it was okay. But one day, this was some years had passed, and one day, I think there was some ceremony somewhere. Oh, I remember, Elizabeth had her Jukai ceremony downstairs, and I went to it. And I thought it was wonderful, and she was so happy and everything, but she bowed, this full body thing, and I thought, no, never. And then a few years later, Karen and Carrie Strombaugh had a similar ceremony up here. And again, it was the bowing thing, and I thought, oh God, why are people doing this? You know, not. And there were a few other ceremonies that I saw, Ed bowing and so forth, but Ed, he's the teach, so he bows. And then, let's see. Then. Then, at some point, somebody in the room said, well, we should know how to do the full body bow. And I was thinking, no, we don't need to do that. But Ed very, you know, said, oh, you want to learn that? Okay, well, this is how you do it. And I looked around, and there were people doing it, you know, just out doing it. This is great. Let's do it. I stood there like this and wouldn't do it. So that was a challenge to a degree. And I began to get a little pressure from Ed about, what about this Jukai thing? And I wasn't the only one who got these little talks. You know, there are five of us. And I'm sure he went around and said, how about this? How about this? And I said, no, I'm not interested. I'm not interested. So Ed would sort of back way off and say nothing to me. And then after a while, he'd come back and sort of nudge a little. And then these four women decided to do it. And they decided with great joy, you know, oh, and we're going to do it at the city center. Wouldn't that be fun? And I was thinking, why would that be fun? Why would that be fun? I'd finally gotten to accept bowing, just plain bowing. Michael was great for bowing. He'd bow anytime he could, you know. So I finally got to the point where I could do that. Meanwhile, I'm trying to study Zen and think about it. I'm not very much of a student, but I'm putting it in my life as best I can. And the other interesting thing, a little interesting side note, is that one day all these people went away to Tassajara, and they came back thrilled with the idea of facing the wall to meditate. So that was another thing. No way am I going to face a wall and meditate. Surely this is just a fad. But, you know, it took. They love it. And I relaxed a little bit. And then I went to, in my home, I meditate in my bedroom, and there's my chair is in the corner of a room, in the corner, facing out. And one day I looked at that and I thought, what? I could face the wall. So I turned the chair around and faced the wall when I meditated home, and it's quite wonderful. So I made these little steps, right? So back to the Jukai. Ed was talking about this to everybody, and these four women just leapt into it and started doing it with Christine, who is the teacher of the wonderful teacher of how to make these itsy-bitsy little stitches. And I was still in some minor torment about it, so I talked to Al, and I talked to Gib, and I talked to you, and a lot of wringing of the hands and talking about my father and how can I do this, it's religious, la la la, and all that. And I think I have a friend who's not, they're not in a, I have a lovely Catholic friend who I have lunch with every week, and her Catholicism does not come out in terms of talking, but she has a, well, this is not important. I was telling her about this, and she said, and also another woman, they both said the same thing, Meredith is just a ceremony, it's just one thing, it's, don't, just do it, you'll be happy, kind of thing, you know. So I took it up, but I was several weeks behind. So I was several weeks behind all the way through. And of course, I began to love sewing these little stitches, these tormenting little stitches. I really began to enjoy it and was sorry to have it end. And and then there's the bowing. So I heard myself say to somebody, they were saying, well, you know, you don't have to do, you do not have to do this at the ceremony, you don't have to do that, there's, you can just stand and bow. And I was saying, right out of my mouth, I said, but I want to do the full body bow. You know? So I've been going to a little gym, and I told this woman I was wanting to do this. So she was giving me some exercise to strengthen the legs, and you know, so I don't break my knees and all this business. And I've been practicing at home this thing. I still don't have it down. I mean, I can do it, but I can't do it the way you guys can do it, where you just suddenly are there. You know, I'm going to go down on one knee and then the next knee and everything without crashing around. I hope. But I am going to do it, and I'm quite pleased with myself. And when I do it, it's a pleasure to do it. I was watching a movie. I came across this movie in the library. Surely I brought this paper up. You saw me put it in my pocket, right?
Mm-hmm. Didn't you put it underneath your jeans?
Oh, did I? There, yeah. Thank you.
It's just, no.
I need help all the time. Okay, so I found this movie in the library called Into Great Silence. And that's a title right there that would grab your mind, Into Great Silence, which I highly recommend if you haven't seen it. And it's a movie about a monastery that was built in the 1600s in the French Alps. And just the title alone, you know that it's a monastery of silent monks. Do you know this thing called Contro? That's something you drink? Mm-hmm. Yes. Is that the name of it? This is where they make it. Mm. But that's not mentioned in the movie. So the filmmaker who wanted to make this movie, go to this monastery, in 1986, he got in touch with the head abbot and said, I would like to do this. And the head abbot said, well, Let us think about it, we'll let you know. 18 years later, he got a phone call saying, come on. So the movie was made in the late 90s, I guess. Early somewhere. Anyway, the movie is subtitled, and it's quite a marvelous movie. But the monk said this, and when it's subtitled, you can stop the screen and write things down, and I did. And this came like, I thought, oh, this is sort of maybe what I'm struggling or thinking about. He said, our entire life, the whole liturgy, and everything ceremonial are symbols. If you abolish the symbols, then you tear down the walls of your own home. When we abolish the symbols, we lose our orientation. Instead, we should search for their meanings. So I just wrote that down, and I study it and study it and look at it and think, okay, and I looked up liturgy. Liturgy is the prescribed rite for public religious services, a ritual. I've run away from ritual, but this is it. If our entire life, the whole liturgy and everything ceremonial are symbols, if you abolish the symbols, then you tear down the walls of your own home. And when you abolish the symbols, we lose our orientation. So everything that we're doing in this Zen world is symbolic, I guess, of the Zen world and the walls of our home in the Zen world. I'm not giving a lecture about this. This is just, I came across it and it seemed, I mean, along, you know, I didn't come across it when I thought I was going to do this, but I came across it. And I thought, oh yeah, that means a lot. And the other thing is that when we first started sewing, where's that little pink harp here? Christine gave us, I imagine she gave everybody this little harp with Namu Kai Bitsu, Namo Kai Ho, Namu Kai So, Namu Kai Bitsu. Anyway, that means I take refuge in Buddha. I'm not sure still what that means, I take refuge in Buddha. Because Buddha's not God. Oh, and that's the other thing I like about Zen, is no sin. Oh, such a relief. There is wrong behavior, which you know right away. But sin, no, you know, you don't go to hell, don't go to heaven, you just keep living. And this Namunkebitsu business was wonderful because I used it. You're supposed to say it with every little stitch. And there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stitches in this rakusu that you all are wearing. And I found that if I didn't say it, I was off. I'd get thinking about something else and the stitch would be wrong and I'd have to go back and sort of undo a little bit and figure it out again. It really, it was a something for, to help focus on what you're doing. And if you are indeed saying, I put, oh, I've forgotten it, something in Buddha.
I take refuge in Buddha.
I take refuge in Buddha. That's what you're doing. So that was a great help to keep me and my stitches on the straight and narrow, yes. I think that's it, unless you want to hear something about Italy. I think I finished the Way-Seeking Mind. That's how I'm here. Okay? Thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay.
Meredith.
Yes.
Thank you for your talk.
You're welcome, Abby. Abby knows a lot about this because she has a writing class that I've gone to for many, many years, and I wrote an awful lot about that awful mother and other things. So.
I was just thinking about how the things in our lives that we think are unfortunate at one point, the abandonment of the mother, for example, can later be seen as very fortunate.
Yes, well, yes, it was.
But I'm also wondering now, what do you believe the bow symbolizes?
The vow?
The bow.
The bow. To me, it means I'm right here. I'm right here, right now. I think that's the best I can do for that, if I'm thinking about it. If I am bowing and thinking. So often we bow and we don't think, because what's for dinner tonight? I'm not sure. Yes, Ed?
I'm Jewish. Uh-huh. And bowing, absolutely not.
None. Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
know, those are idols and they're statues.
Exactly, idols.
I went crazy. I mean, I liked what was happening, but I couldn't reconcile the bowing. I had the same problem. And one day after Sangha, I was walking down a hill thinking about this. And this was after Ed told me it's just respect, you know. But I was thinking about it, and I was, because I couldn't do it. And I was walking down right here, and I had this incredible thought. I thought that Judaism is my relationship with God, and Buddhism is how I conduct my life. And once I had that thought, I was out of prison.
I love that. That's lovely. Oh, that's so lovely. Ha! Huh. That's really fine. Thank you, Ed. Yeah, Al.
Thank you so much. I love your candor and your sense of humor, and thank you for your talk.
Thank you. Thank you, Al. Thank you. I'm supposed to bow. Yeah, Carrie.
I was thinking about the very first, maybe only Dharma sister dinner that we had at my house.
Oh, yeah.
And we were sitting and talking about what this meant to us.
Oh, that's right.
And you said, I don't know that it means anything to me right now. I'm just here. And it was such a joy and such a relief that you were so there and hadn't made a commitment to anything more than what we were doing at that moment in time, which was hanging out and having a dinner together.
Thank you.
And here you are.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you.
Welcome.
I'm torn. Okay, Christine.
Thank you for your talk. I enjoyed it very much, and I did enjoy the humor as well. I mean, you can't laugh at it. Mm-hmm. Life is hard. I'm curious, you didn't bring your children up with any sort of religious instruction. And yet you are participating in something that has quite a bit of spiritual meaning for you. Are they curious about that? What do you say to them?
They're not so curious. My father, my son is in New York City, and he actually has asked me when it's going to happen, and I have sent him a few Buddhist things. I don't want to inundate him with anything, really, you know. Mm-hmm. And Anna, who lives here in town, she's coming. Mm-hmm. I asked her last week or a week ago, I said, I really would like you to come, because she'd sort of indicated maybe something else would get her going somewhere. And she said, oh, I'm coming. So, okay. Mm-hmm. And I don't talk too much about it to either of them, because I don't want to bore them. And I find it very hard to talk about Zen Buddhism. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy thing, because what is it? For me, it's, I just find a silence, sort of, about it. Mm. I can't really. I have a friend who, when he was gung-ho about it years ago, he was just eating it up and going all the way, all over the place to Sashin's and sitting for days on end back east. And he gave me Beginner's Mind, that book. He said, here, read this. This is wonderful. So I read a little bit. I thought, I don't know what this is all about. And I put it aside, and that was it. You know, I couldn't make heads or tails of it at the time. I mean, it just wasn't where my mind was to do that. So, yeah, Gib.
You know, I don't think I have ever met anybody who combines this rigorous, matter-of-fact speech and approach to things with such great joy.
Oh. You know,
it's such a quiet, let's not talk about it, joy.
Thank you, Gib.
And I love the fact that you described step by step, quite literally, you're letting go of your allergy to the force, bowing being the primary one. It was wonderful. And of course, we've all watched that
That's
process. And I noticed, though, that there's another allergy that I hope you work on.
Yes.
And you mentioned it, and it's giving a lecture.
Pardon?
Giving a lecture.
The
fact that you started to talk in a very wonderful way, and then you said, I'm not going to give a lecture.
Oh.
And I just, I'm going to be listening for watching for that particular allergic response, kind of quick withdrawal from it. And to see if that also softens and opens and changes, so that you can sit there and be this matter-of-fact, joyous teacher, which you already are. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Gib. I wanted to add a PS to this business about the sewing. It's sort of an admission. I'm admitting that one of the reasons was that these four women are women I really like, and I didn't want to be left out. I wanted to spend my time with them as much as possible. So, I mean, I guess that's a good reason to do it. Yeah. So, anyway, that was another thing, you know, to hang out with these four women who I really, really like. And so, thank you to them. Yeah, Kim.
Thank you so much, Meredith. I kind of consider myself still a newcomer of Sangha. You know, I feel like I'm still kind of a newcomer to the Sangha. And I must say, when I first got here, I was so in awe of you, because I felt that Ed and Gib and you were so set your wisdom and everything you had to offer in discussion, I've just revered it so much. Meredith is speaking.
I
had no idea you had these challenges with bowing, which I think the American culture, we all pretty much share. Anyway, your talk was lovely. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for your words. I don't feel any wisdom at all. Thank you. I'll take them. Yeah. Okay.
Anyone else want to?
Yes. Oh, Karen. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. I know Gary often says, Meredith's the Buddha. Mm-hmm. And I'm always very jealous. And your stories that you tell us, they are full of wisdom with the insects in the garden and they're marvelous. I loved what Gib said about the joy. And I love that you just didn't seem nervous today at all. And it was just this warm feeling of closeness and Sangha coming together. And
thank you, Karen. Buddha. Thank you. Yeah. Thank every single one of you. All of you. Just thank all of you. All of you. You're all so lovely. This is why we come every Friday, because we're all really so lovely. Thank you, Ed, for making this, for suggesting we do these things.
Well, thank you, Meredith, for a beautiful talk, and I can't wait to have the ceremony a week from Saturday and observe your beautiful bow.
Okay, that's the next hurdle. Yes.